again tomorrow morning, so I can't stay up all night, but I wish I could. And to Donna, if you're listening, John was a great guy. My condolences to you. And I met John at one of the ham fests many years ago. He came over to my tune-up table, and he was impressed the fact that I myself have helped many amateurs over the years of having this tune-up table at the various ham fairs where you can get a radio checked out before you buy it. And as a free service, and never charged, always free. So we had a nice discussion about that, and then getting into a little bit more technical subjects at the time. So I did have the pleasure of meeting John. So that with that, Roy, back to you, and that's it for now. He will definitely be missed, and. I can still hear his voice, and it'll in the background, that I can, that'll never go away. Back to you, Roy. And I'm sorry I can't stay, but I really have to. I get an early meeting tomorrow morning. AC2GS WA2CDL. Go ahead, Roy.
Thanks, Andy. Night, night, Teddy Chisibiv. Yeah, Andy. Thank you very much for your warm words. And to Donna. Microphone pop out. I believe it's okay.
Understand that, real life has its requirements, but I'm glad you were able to join us and to add your voice to ours.
I hope I'm okay right now because I put the microphone back.
Andy, thank you very much for those kind words. I'm glad. My father mentioned you many times. I can't believe you guys that you're doing this for him. It's just amazing. I will be listening to you guys as time goes on. I'm going to keep this Kenwood. And when I come into the office and use the computer, it brings warm feelings to me, as if my father's still here. Because all these years, you've been in the background. I've been with, spent so much time with my father.
Dr. Roy?
Wait, I just want to, let me just acknowledge you guys. Okay, I just want to thank you, Wesley, Roy, Dick, and everyone else for allowing John to express himself on the repeater and to join us and to be part of the family of Limark. And incidentally, I've been a Limark member since the early 70s, so it's been a great family of people for many, many years. And Donna, my pleasure to have known your father and to have met him. So take care of yourself. And I really have to go. I'm sorry, but I got to take off. And go to sleep. I got to get up early. Good night. Well, Roy, let me give it back to you as the moderator, and thank you again. WHCDO clear. And guys, have a good rest of the net.
Thank you, Andy. 73, pleasant dreams. Have a good weekend. And Donna, it's just a small example of us giving back a teeny tiny itsy bitsy portion of all the time that John gave to all of us. So it's our pleasure to do this here tonight. And in the future, as I prattle on this repeater, I will think that you might actually be listening to us and take a little bit of pleasure out of that as well.
I will be listening, and I would love that if you mention my father and my name. I will be listening.
In other words, she wants to keep the radio. Put the radio on from time to time, listen to you guys. Actually, she's this every night. She's sitting here, she's sitting in his chair, and she's feeling good. and that's what you guys are giving her by just talking to yourself, just by regular conversation. Send to Adrian. Dr. Roy.
Well, very good. Unfortunately, we can't do much for John anymore, but to make his loved ones feel just a little bit better, that's great. That's wonderful. That's reason alone. I would like to try the people who didn't respond, and then if they're not around, I'll open it up for anyone new who wants to throw out their call sign. So the first person that didn't respond was KD2MPW. Michael, is Michael around? Okay, what about KE2EJ? Eric, are you around, Eric?
Actually, yes, I am. And I guess I got a few things to say. First, let me let it drop. You know, I have a tendency to go fix TV transmitters and FM radio stations, and I'd be driving back home at 2 or 3 in the morning. The first call you'd put out on the radio was KC2WGB. And John would come back to you, be up all hours of the night. It's always a friendly voice that you could have an endless conversation with. When I first started talking to John many years ago, we talk a little bit about radio, but I'm more interested in people. And to get John engaged in some of the things that he thought, which sometimes would lead to politics, he had some rather rigid views on the way things were in the world, but he's the kind of guy that if you could present something to him and give him a set of facts that intrigued him, he would actually go and investigate it and find that there are other points of view. Really talk politics here, but some of the conversations were started like midnight, and the next thing you knew, it was 6 in the morning. Let me let it drop again. I mean, we would spend hours talking about music, politics, religion, the concept of other people's idea, how the world should work. Of course, we spoke about electronics many, many times. He was interested in what I was doing. I was interested in what he was doing. We'd throw ideas back and forth. And it's a funny way of, but it's kind of like expressing love for one another, the way the conversation would go, and the tone which it took. John was the kind of guy that had a certain set of ideas, and he really kind of stuck to them. But he was so open that not only would he listen, he would actually go and investigate, and sometimes he would agree with your position and your point of view. He was a very interesting man. He was always there. He had this wonderful personality about him, and his voice was really pleasant to listen to beyond just the conversation that you would have. There's so many little different things that would go on. John was my interpreter for Wesley, because I'm very much hard of hearing, and I really could never understand what Wesley had to say. It would be sometimes very esoteric conversations that were going on. First thing I would do is ask John, what did Wesley say? And he would repeat it verbatim. Sometimes he'd lose it, but we all pretty much had a blast. Let me let it drop again. When it came to some of the technical stuff, he would be working on part of his project, like the pendulum thing, seismic thing, which is a little more than a pendulum. And we'd throw ideas back and forth, and I'd throw a few out to him. He'd come back, and we'd actually discuss it. And next day or two, we actually tried it out. So he was a guy who was really very much into it. More than a hobby, it was more of a love on his part for the things that he liked to do, and he would bend over backwards for anybody. I could go on and on, but I'm going to turn it back to you. Zoe, I'm sorry, I don't know your call. Back to that, K2J.
Alpha Charlie 2, Golf Sierra. Yeah, John had one of the greatest radio voices that I can think of. I mean, I went out and bought a PR-40 that he had, and unfortunately, I don't sound a bit better. But his voice could lull you to sleep. It was a pleasure to listen to him. And, yeah, he had a curiosity. He had an endless curiosity that unfortunately a lot of people, when they get to be a certain age, lose. But he never lost it. And, you know, that's one of the many things. I mean, he was tinkering up towards the end. I mean, there was always some experiment going on in the back of his lab that he was, he would talk to people about, but, you know, it wasn't necessary for him to talk to people about it. It was enough for him to tinker about and to come to some conclusion. And, you know, sometimes he would say, look, you know, these things are already known to people. It just, it wasn't known to me, and I was curious, and I wanted to find out. And so I always love that curiosity about John.
You know, that was a never-ending search for truth and justice, at least in the eyes of the way things were presented. He was the kind of man that would really dig in, especially, it didn't necessarily have to interest him, but if it was intriguing in any form, he would go after it and learn more about it. He was someone who could just suck up information and, you know, churn it in his brain and spit it back out with his own little flavor. And by the way, his voice was one of those things that you can never forget. So it is such a good radio voice, too. My being hard of hearing, I had no trouble listening to him. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, indeed. It takes more than just a good microphone or a good equalizer. It takes a good pair of vocal cords. Any other stories you feel like telling right now, Eric, or we can kind of rotate around? It's up to you.
I could probably dig up a few more, but you guys carry on. I'm kind of like trying to put something together here, and also I'm going to extend the operation into the computer, so I'm going to do that in a few minutes. But I'll be listening. Can you too, John?
The things that I didn't know about John.
Appreciate it. Let me just take this opportunity, because we went down the list. As long as, unfortunately, you're not persona non grata on this repeater, if you would, if you got a call sign out there and you want to talk about John, please transmit your call sign and I'll put you on the list.
Kilowatt 7, Whiskey Juliet November on Echo Link. Am I coming through?
Yes, yeah, Bill. Anyone else want to throw out their call sign?
Alpha 1, Victor, Victor Hotel.
Victor, Victor Hotel, could you give me your call sign one more time?
Whiskey, America 1, WA 1, Victor, Victor Hotel.
Very good, you're on the list. Anyone else want to throw out their call sign and go on the list?
KD2DIG.
KD2DIG, I have you on the list. Anyone else want to go on the list?
K2YO.
Okay, K2YO. Anyone else wishing to go on the list? Okay, Bill, K7WJAN, you're next. What do you have to say?
Okay, thank you very much for giving me a chance to say something. I have to make sure I don't hit the cell phone with my nose, otherwise it'll shut it off. Located in Phoenix, Arizona, born and raised in New York City, Bethel Hospital, and left when I was 17 and a half. First came on to the TechNet in Vegas in 2008. I stumbled on a repeater where it's broadcast every Sunday by the repeater owner. And I have been listening to the TechNet via different modes, WLIE, scanner, EchoLink. It's whenever I can get in. And for over 10 years, John's voice has been entering the house every Sunday. And I just want to say that I'm over here in Phoenix, but I'm sure there's people in Canada. I'm sure there's people in Phoenix. I'm sure there's people all over the world that are not going to cue the mic, but I'm going to step up to the plate for all those people that are out of town to let you guys know that he's going to be missed far, far outside of New York City. K7WJN.
Thank you very much, Bill. I do appreciate it. Yes, there is a lot of people who listen to him on the TechNet, and we spoke with on the TechNet, and who know him and regard him well. And unfortunately, it wasn't kind of easy to spread the word far and wide. We mentioned it on the one TechNet, but not everyone listens every week. But we try. So I'm very thankful, Bill, that you were able to be the voice of all those guys outside the metropolitan area that have been a presence on the TechNet for all these many years.
Oh yeah, the TechNet has been a wealth of information. Just like Dick says, I mean, there's stuff you're going to learn on the TechNet that you're just not going to learn anywhere else. And Dick has done a wonderful job of disseminating technical information. And all the times when you guys were going through all that interference and you guys never gave up, man, I'll tell you what, you are one set of tough cookies, man. You just don't give up. And there's people out here that appreciate that. I just want to let you guys know that. K7WJN.
AC2GS. Well, once again, Bill, thanks for coming by, and thanks for participating in the TechNet as well. It's a great institution in the metropolitan area, and Dick should be quite proud of what he's accomplished in these 30-plus years. And Paul has helped to make it what it is today, and John helped in his time to make it what it is today.
Indeed. I'm really surprised that this EchoLink thing is working, man. It's working pretty good. Okay, I said my piece. Everybody that's on EchoLink, I put a poem up there for you guys to read. So I think there's about five or six guys on EchoLink. So this is my way of saying thanks. And John will be missed. So I'm going to clear and let the next guy come up. K7WJN, God bless.
Thank you, Bill. I've been reading it from my EchoLink. It's very rare that someone publishes poetry on EchoLink, so that was a special thing.
Well, I thought it would be appropriate.
I agree. Okay, next on the list is Harold, WA1VVH.
Over the air. I monitor the technical net very frequently, although I don't usually check in, and I've always found it very fascinating, so sorry to hear about the passing of a major member of it, and I've talked to Dick many a time, maybe he's listening No, I don't know. So I'll keep it short in case the signal stays here. Back to the net, WA1 CPA.
Very good, Harold. We're glad that you were able to participate here tonight, and I'm glad that you enjoy the TechNet. I've already mentioned how much I think of the TechNet, and I don't want Dick to get too big ahead tonight.
See, I was always wondering, how tall is Dick?
You'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, the rumor says 5'11" or 5'11½". The guy you just heard of, Harold, WA1VVH, is a VHF, UHF operator from way back. If you go to his QRZ.com, you'll see that he also owns a beautiful Rhone 55 tower with a beautiful picture from the tower looking down. So up there in New Hampshire, there's some serious VHF operators, and Harold is one of them. Over to you, Roy, K2LIW.
Roy, if you, and Dick, if you don't mind, one more question. I always remember a picture of Dick in the hat. Is it something special about that hat? And to explain.
Yeah, I used to go to flea markets with a cowboy hat. I haven't been doing that recently, but just a way to keep my son off my face. But not very many people did it, so they thought there was something significant about that hat. That's, I went through a Western hat phase, but I'm through it now, Wes. Over to you, Wes, K2RIW.
It was a very much characteristic item. Every time I was on Hamfest, I was looking if there is a guy in a hat. There was one time, long time ago, many years ago, and they told me, the guy over there, but I couldn't see you. And I didn't have too much courage to, say hello. But the next time I have a chance, I would be pleased. Dr. Roy.
Yes, indeed. It would be great to have an eyeball QSO with all the wonderful people that I've had an opportunity to talk to, but unfortunately never had an opportunity to meet in real person, real life. Let's move on to Donald, KD2DIG.
Very good. Thank you, Roy. The TechNet's a wonderful resource for amateur radio, and John was a great part of it. It was especially fun to listen to the mailbag questions, and someone earlier had mentioned that he sort of brought them to life. Like he did a lot of research, I suppose, with the person who was asking the question, and he knew exactly what they were after. And but beyond that, many was the night I'd sit up until the wee small hours of the morning listening to him and others talk about topics such as societal issues, government, history, economics, and of course the RF stuff. And he'll certainly be missed. I just suppose I ought to say something. But thanks for a proper send off for a fine man. KD2DIG, back to you, Roy.
Thank you, Don. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to do that. John meant a lot to all of us, and this is just a little way of paying it back forward, if you will. Next on the list is Bernie, K2YO.
H-H, comment.
Yes, Andy.
Before I forget, I just want to mention that with Richard, especially known as Dick, I met him many years ago, and he was wearing the cowboy hat, and he looked like he was over 6 feet tall, and taller than me, and I'm 6 feet tall, so When I went to Oklahoma, I bought one too, but I never wore it. But anyway, I was listening to the TechNet since the late 80s, early 90s. And just wanted to mention that, so I might be one of the longest listeners of the TechNet. And something else that entered my mind was when the gentleman said we're strong, but that reminded me of John being an extremely strong man, but a very gentle man, and he had a lot of qualities. I think he had a good balance of qualities that made him exceptional, and no exception to his voice. I mean, pleasant voice, and just had such a good balance and so many qualities. I just can't express that enough. Thanks for picking me up. Back to you, Roy, N2HOH.
Quite quick comment I'm going to make, Roy, and that is John was into so darn many things, interested in so many things, so wideband, if you know what I mean. One other person way back in history also was very wideband, Leonardo da Vinci. So to some degree, John was our modern-day Leonardo da Vinci. AC2GS, K2RIW, go ahead, Roy.
AC2GS. Except John's stuff actually worked. Leonardo's was very nice on a theoretical basis, but a lot of those drawings that he made really wouldn't fly.
Good point. Although Leonardo was definitely limited by the amount of test equipment he could put his hands on, he was living under a considerable disadvantage compared to a modern man. So we got to go easy on that one. Also, the word science hadn't really been a respected endeavor in those days. It was almost looked down upon, if you know what I mean. So he lived under a number of disadvantages compared to a modern man. Over to you, Roy.
Quite true, and I certainly don't want to disrespect Leonardo da Vinci. I just wanted to point out that although he was very creative and inventive, it's always nice when the things actually work. That's all I'm saying. But I have nothing against Leonardo da Vinci. He was a great artist, and he was a brilliant inventor. It's just a shame that technology generally around him wasn't up to the, you know, his needs. Then his stuff would be more than just drawings. But I don't know. I guess I don't know. I guess I pour cold water on poor Leonardo. But I think there's enough people who are great fans of his that no one will take umbrage.
As a scientist, when you're doing an experiment, the whole reason you do an experiment is for confirmation of concept or to prove that the idea works. If you're pushing the state of the art, by definition, a certain percentage of what you do must fail. If you can't find the failures, then you're not really doing something, if you know what I mean. So if you're really doing new stuff, you have to accept the fact that you're going to get some failures. And if you've got the gumption to keep going, then you're a good scientist. Over to you, Roy, K2IW. In fact, even physicians will occasionally have to bury their mistakes until they discover better ways of doing things. You got it, Joy. Roy, K2IW.
Unfortunately, it's never good when you have to bury your mistakes.
Any just a review comment?
Todd, comment.
Yeah, John and I were talking about, it just came up with an incident in Mexico, a couple of other places as well. And he was mentioning how he would watch the workers do a particular job because the way they did it, in other words, the particular steps and the way they went about it wasn't, shall we say, documented or in the actual normal way of doing things. And it turned out that the way they did it was better. And he was never, ever against that. And he picked up a bunch of tips and tricks, even people in Mexico in rural settings and the way they were working on something. And, you know, like discovering a little tip or trick from a lost art. That was also something that came up when we were discussing Roman baths, for example, as well as the workers in Mexico. So just wanted to throw that in there, and when it comes around to me, yeah, I got a story or two.
Yes, I recall when John would get into a conversation about Roman cement and how the entire science of it was lost for centuries until recently rediscovered. So, you know, sometimes the old-timers had better stuff than we have, even in our modern high-tech world. I was just wondering, between Dick and Andy HUH, were either of those hats 10-gallon hats?
That was the Romans, Roy.
Not even close. And there were a couple of old, foggy Western movies where the center portion of the hat was very, very tall. And I think they called it a 10-gallon hat. But I don't think that it was really literal. And no, not at all. Thank you, Roy.
I think I said Roman cement. I meant Roman cement. I'm sorry if I said something completely different. 10-gallon hats were never 10-gallon. It's a corruption of a Spanish word meaning a gallant hat, a dressy hat, if you will.
Very logical sounding. I hadn't heard that before.
I think it's actually the Spanish is tan galant, which, you know, if you don't know much Spanish, I guess tan galant sounds a lot like 10-gallon.
And my hat was is a conservative sized hat, but at a medium high quality.
Okay, very good. I don't recall if I had any cowboy hats after about the age of 10. Cowboys and Indians was very popular when I was a child.
Yes, and I'm not sure we ever talked about that, but even we're talking about John at 2 o'clock in the morning, late at night, I was having a glycemic attack, and John told me to go to a paramedic or fire engine or a firehouse near me, and I said, yes, there is, and if I went to the firehouse to see if they can do anything for me, but the engines were already out, and the guy with the fireman that was there was not a paramedic, and he said there was no equipment there to help me. Of course, I didn't want to call an ambulance, so of course I went back home and gave John another call, and we discussed it, and I took another protocol, and just talking to John made me feel better, so I was fine. But just wanted to relay an encounter or a nice conversation with John that popped into my mind. Yes, he's always there, it seemed, when you needed him, which was another quality.
Yes, and that sort of touches on a side story of how you probably first found out that I was on radios or involved in any of this, because you and John were talking about something, and John started to give you medical advice, and I don't know, I was in a whimsical mood that night, and when I heard the recording, I used to send John way too many emails, and I sent him one that was tongue-in-cheek that said that he really shouldn't be practicing medicine without a license, and he told you about the email, and you thought that I was going to call the police on him or something.
Yes, well, I think sort of something like that, but basically I have dealt with extreme characters, and unfortunately I got to see them do some extreme things in my life, Well, I think John might have made an exception for me. I think he knows I'm a good student, I'll just say, and I would use information that that might not be a good idea to tell other people, but for some reason you can tell me, and I'll find the right thing to do with that information. So I think he made an exception in my case, but yes, I do remember that, Roy, and I just was a little concerned. I didn't want to see somebody who, I didn't know John was that tough at the time. I just didn't want to see a nice person get in any, because of me, get into any kind of situation. Always watching out for the next guy, so to speak, especially someone as important as John.
Yes, I understand. I mean, fortunately, by that time, John knew about my sense of humor, let us call it. And so, thankfully, he didn't take it the wrong way. I used to write way too many emails to him that were way too long, and he was always kind about it, and when required, responded. More often, he liked responding over the radio than by email. I understand that, but it was always a pleasure to kind of bounce ideas off of John and to see how you know, what reaction I could get from him.
Okay, well, I'm glad you escaped that. You know, you could have became one of the persons that he got mad at. Actually, it might have been a real honor to get have John get mad at you. I might have gotten close. I think I've only known two people in my life, John and one other person I've never actually seen really mad. Don't really lose it, so another fine quality.
Yes, I've never heard John angry, and I certainly, I think I mentioned it early tonight, don't know anyone stupid enough to have tried to make John angry, because I think John could always take care of himself, and so only a fool would do something like that.
Yes, I heard another station here, Roy. I also had a conversation with him, and I can't say too much, but I did find out that we may have known someone from our past that, yes, you would you wouldn't want to get him mad. Very, very well said, and I recognize that finally. Roy?
I heard the suffix of a call sign. It sounded like QRY. Would the person please give their call sign as slow as possible?
ATQRY.
Oh, hello, David. Nice of you to join us tonight. Would you like to say something about John?
Sir, when I returned from a long hiatus from ham radio between the first call sign and the second call sign and trying out the VHF and UHF for the first time, you know, John was the fixture. He was the one that you heard, so you know, the whole ham radio was affected by him, and he made the ham radio so much better for me. However, he and I disagreed on a lot of points. It was art versus engineering, and I have a story drop. We were talking about photography, and he was doing an experiment, and he, for him, that photography was taking a piece of 8x10 black and white film, sheet film, and exposing it to some kind of electrical charge, you know?
so that the film, the halide particles were affected by the electrical charge, and it left an imprint on the film. Drop. And then he would develop the film and analyze all the data. And he analyzed all the data, and he would come up with all kinds of information about this experiment, you know? And I told him that for me, photography would be to take that same 8x10 piece of sheet film, put it in a view camera, do like a very special portrait of someone, or a landscape. Drop. So I suggested to him that if he took all of his film from lab experiments, printed them on paper, and submitted them to a museum or a gallery, he could have an art exhibit of his lab findings. I thought, you know, for me, that would be very interesting. And I guess, you know, he and I didn't agree on all points, but I know that the value of our relationship and my relationship with him went beyond the threshold, KG2RY.
That certainly is a good story, David. I have this vague memory. There was a time, I think it was John, he was doing some work with radioactive material and exposing it to film negative material and developing it, and it was demonstrating very, very unusual exposure findings. I think it was John. It could have been Wesley. So I guess Wesley can tell me if it was him or John that did that.
He gave me the question because I was playing with a speaker here. So please repeat it.
Actually, David was mentioning that John was arcing plasma and taking picture, you know, developing negatives based on arcing. And I seem to recall some experiment where there was some radioactive material that was producing a halo effect in an unusual way, but I didn't recall if it was John's experiment or if it was your experiment.
There was a time when John was playing with it. There was his friend here who has a particle lab, and I was supposed to meet that guy. From time to time, John had a number of very much rare guests, and they were high-tech guys, especially from particle physics. What I know about it is, yes, that John was using a lamp, and it was arc-based lamp, to create the pictures on the film, and then the film was developed, and the film was actually in the cover, so it wasn't exposed. Apparently what happened is that X-ray created by arc lamp was able to get through the film and then leave the print on it. The next thing that he did was, let me jump. He took radioactive material, which was cesium-137 or cobalt-60, and he put next to the film. And this specimen has two lights. One is gamma, and the other one is line of spectra, line of X-ray. So he was curious of what am I going to get from it. So when I was doing my experiments with Coleman, technology, he suggested to me to take a film, and by that I would have no doubt proof of the fact that I'm creating a radioactive decay from the matter or from the device on test. But yes, John was cooperating with me, but I didn't see John exactly doing it. It's just that John mentioned it to me. So there was two instances. One was with a pure X-ray from the arc lamp, and the other one was from the radioactive specimen. Back to you.
AC2GS. Okay, so I didn't disremember it. There was some question about what the internal, how the radioactive material was packed in the disc, and John was going to evaluate it at some later time, and I never heard if he had done anything more. The trouble with a very active, curious mind is very often you'll jump from one curiosity to another, and he might have solved that problem. He might not have. I don't recall him ever mentioning it again.
Okay. Here's what I can recall. John had an access to various number of decaying substances, and he was from time to time playing with it. And as far as I know, he had no problem to get anything that he wants to. But that could be because of his friends. So there was a time when John mentioned to me that he's going to have five to six people, and they're going to be from nuclear lab. And when we were talking about Ortec or Canberra or any other technology, he could say a lot about it. It's like he played with it. And he said, from time to time, they come to me and consult something with me. So there was, when you're talking about something that you do not know about the person, it's like, how come John was able to get the knowledge in this area? How come John was able to keep up the conversation that was very much strictly technical with me? A lot of time we talk over the phone, we didn't talk over the radio. And he was sparkling with his knowledge. Over the radio, he was kind of like not really eager to discuss the things. And to achieve. One more thing. When I was playing with the Gillespie and Coleman, I had a quartz tube with the layers of non-radioactive material. And all of a sudden, my neutron detectors went crazy. It was crazy. It was over the limit. And of course, from the science point, that would be very hard to explain it. So that was one of the discussions that we had over the phone for quite 6 hours straight. And he said he's going to consult it with his colleagues, and he did so, and he gave me the answers. But I still claim that I had the results, and those results are checkable even now. And from the time when he spoke with John to the time that I'm right now, it's like 6 years. So my lab is enormous, humongous right now, comparing to what it was before. Back to you.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier in the night that he used to have these regular collections of heavy-duty, high-end scientists that just kind of came down to his house, and they sat around, and they discussed the latest, greatest state-of-the-art. I wish I could arrange for something like that, but You know, John, again, John was a friendly guy. John was a smart guy. So it's no surprise that he befriended some really smart other guys, and they all got together and were smart at each other.
Well, I can tell you even more. He wasn't really only having a friend. He was involved. So when I was talking about, I mean, I have right now in my lap probably the full set of the most expensive devices and most rare devices in particle physics. He was playing with all of them. He knew all of them. We were talking about the models. We were talking about the properties. We were talking about the results, and he was keeping up with me. So the part that we were talking over the radio was probably 2%, 3% of it. So 96%, 98% we were talking over the radio. And yes, he said, "Give me a moment." Can you believe it? It was 10 p.m. maybe 10:30 p.m. He made a phone call, and he called me back, and he gave me the answers. That was absolutely amazing. It was like the whole particle lab is waiting only for his phone call. And
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
About it.
Well, you timed out at the very end, but we all got the gist of it, yes. I just want to give Bernie a call out, K2YO. Are you back yet? Because you checked in and then you weren't there. So I'm hoping that you're here again. Oh, well, I guess not. Hopefully he'll join us soon. There's a gentleman in EchoLink, WB2QQR Irving. Would he like to say something?
Yeah, my pussy is so wet right now, I'm playing it myself.
Okay, is there anyone out there who would like to give us a legitimate call sign and to be added to the list?
Kilo Delta, Tier November, asking uniform.
Hello, Kilo Delta 2, November, Oscar uniform. Would you like to say something?
No, thanks. Just listening here. KD2NIU.
Okie doke, doesn't cost anything to listen. Anyone out there who would like to say something about John, please give us your call sign.
Into HCN. We're really enjoying the evening. Donna is sitting with us and listening, and she's in a good mood. You're really doing a beautiful job for her and for me as well. Donna recently gave a lot of equipment to the president of the club, and that was partially her contribution to the club, and she's happy that she was able to do so. So thank you very much, Rich, for coming here and helping her. Rich, are you there?
Moment. Let's see if Rich K2KNB is still out there, because Wesley wants to talk to you about something.
As far as I other things. You were talking, Dick was talking about scientific experiments and the model failures. There was one time when we were talking about global line, and I remember that was at the end of year 2016, and John spent around 2 weeks talking to me about this stuff, and Dick was also kind enough to give a few words of what he thinks. We even spoke about it over the radio, which was the sending electrical signals on one wire transmission. Dick, do you recall that?
Yes, I do, and as I remember, it was an article, I think, in Ham Radio Magazine, although I'm not quite sure of that, but it appeared, although it was QEX, I think it was QEX Magazine, and you could tell by the numbers that were given as to the insertion loss that the guy measured, some of those losses were not properly explained. So is the single wire line, the G line as it's called, capable at VHF, UHF frequencies of giving you a very low propagation loss? And it's also very difficult to suspend, so it may not be practical. It requires an extremely large launching structure and a receiving structure at the at each end. And the leakage is going to have definite shielding problems. In other words, other services nearby are going to be hearing that signal. So I had some trouble accepting whether or not it was a practical idea. And the experiments that were described in the article led me to believe that there was some missing information, so to speak, and that's part of our discussion. Over to you, Wes, K2IW.
Was Glenn Elmore transmission of energy over the single wire December 27, 2016. When I spoke to him, Glenn Elmore, who is a ham radio operator, he was kind of asking me, who's it? And when I told him, oh boy, I know the guy, you should have told me already. Yes, I know him from QST. So, the funny thing is that if we think how many guys outside metropolitan area knows you, it's probably enormous amount of people. I don't know if it's because of your publications or because of your activity right now, but I was really trying to translate to him your position in this area, and at a certain point he said, well, Dick is right, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't work. And to explain.
Yeah, I've had very few articles published in QST Magazine lately, but back in the 70s I had a number of articles, and so lots of people thought they knew me back then, so to speak. So, in other words, from your conversation with Glenn, the guy who wrote the article on the G-Line experiment, did he agree that some of my skepticism as to where the extra losses are coming from, he was saying that I might be right on my guesses on the losses? Is that what he was saying, Wes? Go ahead.
Now, he said that his practical experiment proved the concept, but as far as practicality of it, he said Dick is completely right.
Was he therefore admitting that for many amateur radio operators, it's not necessarily a practical way of getting the signal over a long distance with low loss? Is that sort of what he was saying?
That is correct.
Okay, sounds like then he was being rather honest. And a good experiment, but you have to be a little bit careful as to how you explain where the extra losses were coming from. Back to U.S.
I don't recall the rest of the conversation. I have to look at my notes.